Hey, it's Steve Imke. In the fall of 2016, I had an opportunity to spend two nights with a class full of hobbyists that wanted to learn how to take a hobby that they love and turn it into a viable business. During those two nights, I took them on a journey of business entrepreneurship. I'm sorry you didn't make it, and I hope this is the next best thing. Here are excerpts from that live event. Hope you enjoy it. But even more important, I hope it inspires you to get off the couch and do something with it. Thanks for listening. So I want to talk a little bit about the difference between business and economic models. So we talked a little bit about the Xerox piece already. All they did was change the way that they were going to go ahead and deliver. They didn't change the copier or anything like that. They simply looked at a different way of their business model of how they were going to go ahead and make this thing work. They were going to rent it to you instead of you were going to buy it. So that is a key part to understand. Now, we have the economic model. Amazon and Walmart sell pretty much the same stuff, but Amazon sells it online. Walmart sells it in a physical store. And if you buy stuff on Walmart, you got to pick it up at the store because they don't ship it to your house. So do you understand how that works? So we're going to talk a little bit about it a little bit more detail. So within the economic model, because this is the one everybody understands, the business model, we kind of drove down that. So we'll talk a bit about economic models. It's kind of divided into essentially four components, and we'll talk about each one of these things independently. Revenue drivers is number one. So I want to tell you a story. A couple years ago, we're in Pigeon Forge. I think it's Tennessee. It's where Dolly Parton is from. But anyway, it's kind of a vacation mecca in the middle of the Smoky Mountains, Great Smoky Mountains, right? And so Steve says, you know, he's responsible for the entertainment that evening, and so he goes online and he finds the Dixie Stampede, and it says $40 for a meal and a show. And I'm thinking, cheapskate Steve, I told you, my wife says I'm so tight I squeak when I walk. So I said, this is it, great, four of us going out there, you know, four times four, I'm for the $160. I'm good for the night, right? I'm going to buy this thing. So I say, okay, I'm good for that. Of course, here's what we talk about. We get there, they say the show starts at 8 o'clock, right? Or 7 o'clock. The show doesn't start at 7 o'clock, it starts at 8 o'clock. But they put you into a little bar with a little guy picking a banjo or something like that, and a lot of waitresses that are constantly asking you, would you like a cocktail, would you like a drink or whatever, and then they sell you, you know, a $10 beer. So they've just figured out another way to extract some money from me. So guess what? Steve now just spent $40 to get four beers. So my $160 night just turned into a $200 night. So then what ends up happening is they say, hey, the show's ready to start. The doors are on that end. And so everybody walks down there. You think you walk into the stadium or wherever the show place? No. You stand in front of this big green screen. They've got a photographer there. The photographer's taking all kinds of pictures of you. Then when you're done, then you walk into the theater. You watch the show. When you leave, you walk out. No. You walk into the gift shop where they're standing there and they're showing you pictures. Look at this. Because in the green screen, now they've put all these pictures of the Great Smoky Mountains behind you and all these great things, you know, and you're seeing your whole family like, oh, I never went to Paris, and look, I got a picture, you know. And so they have all these different things. And so you can't get out of there. So next thing you know, we're buying keychains and we're buying this. Oh, got to have the memorabilia, you know. So 200 just turned into 250. And then you walk through the gift shop and it's always like you got to go through there and say, oh, I always wanted one of these. And, you know, next thing you know, you leave there, it's like a $250 night. It's like way more expensive than I really thought it was going to go ahead and be. Because these are individual revenue drivers. They have figured out ways to extract more money. Has anybody been on a cruise? Okay, you know the same kind of thing. They tell you, hey, $1,000, right? No big deal, right? You go in there, you go pay for that, you can't walk out of there for $2,000. Especially when they're all sitting there and they're saying, well, we're going to add a 15% gratuity as you walk out. You know, I mean, it's just crazy stuff, right? Casa Bonita's. Anybody ever been up there in Denver? You know how that is. I take my grandson there, for example. You can't go there without buying toys and everything else and games and everything else to kind of get them go there, okay? The list goes on as you kind of go on. But the idea is, what kind of revenue drivers? What other things can you use other than just selling one thing? How can you add other kinds of things? How can you maybe annuitize that payment, make them pay for a longer period of time, pay it in perpetuity, as opposed to just paying once on the front end? So what are your revenue drivers? Volume and margin. So volume, obviously, is the number of units that you sell. Margin is the price less the cost that you have. Not profit now. It's just margin. This hasn't turned into profit yet, so we're still calling it margin. So, for example, a Prada bag might cost $3,000, a handbag. Where a Wilson leather bag might cost $34. At least that was from my research. Could be different now. I don't really know. Porsches and Chevys, that kind of stuff. Do you think they sell a lot of Prada bags?
I'm
going to say not as many. Just like they don't sell as many Porsches as they sell Chevy. But the difference is the margins add up. So I used to have an invisible fencing business. In the invisible fencing business, we sold a self-install kit for $750. It cost me about $300 to purchase all the component parts and pay my franchise fee, and everything else between that $300 and the $750 was my margin. And I said, told the company one day, I said, if I could lower that price, I know I could sell a lot more. So they said, hey, let's just do an experiment. So for 1 month, sell it for not $750, but for $500. But he says, on the other side, what I want you to do is then I want you to sell for $1,000 and then come back to me and talk to me. So for 1 month, I sold it for $500 instead of $750. You know what? I sold more. But when I added up all the margin, I didn't make as much as I did when I went $750. So next month, I went to $1,000. I sold a lot less than I sold the $750, okay? But I made a lot more on it. But I didn't make quite as much money as I did when I sold it for $750. And so, of course, I had to go back, hat in hand, and I kind of told them, and they said, now that is why we told you it was the retail suggested price was $750. Because that's kind of the sweet spot. It turned out that it had nothing to do with the actual components. It happened to do that it was roughly half the price of an alternative. So if you want to put a stockade fence or a chain link fence, it was about $1,500. This was half, and when it was $1,000, they said, you know what? Chain link fence keeps other dogs out. Keeps my kids in the yard. I get some additional benefits. If it was $500, they bought it, but I couldn't sell enough to actually make it. Does that make sense to you? So there is that price. It's not the sum of parts a lot of times, it's the value that you're providing that goes out there. Okay, so that's what we need to understand is volume and price, which is another one of those economic drivers. Operating leverage. This is a big one. It's the one I'm working on today. I own a restaurant. Do I want to buy another commercial building because I've got a lot of equity in this particular property and I can extract that? And so here's what happens. I can borrow money from the bank for a piece of property. So I just refinanced the restaurant that I have in Ohio. I borrow that money from the bank at roughly 4.25%. Maybe it was 4.5. I can't remember right now. Let's say it was 4.5%. Well, I make on that about 8.5%. So the difference, all right, so I'm using a bank's money and making money on their money, plus I get the total 8% on the cash that I put down payment. So if I have to put down a third of it in cash and two-thirds of it is on a bank note, for example, the two-thirds on the bank note, I actually make the margin on their particular money because I assume additional risk associated with that, but it's not my money. So effectively, I could buy, instead of buying one, I could buy three of them and pocket the margin from each and every one of them. Does that make sense? So if I had, makes sense. And that's what we're talking about, operating leverage. And then we had talked about that break-even chart, and we've talked about the crossover and changing the fixed price and those kind of things. This is exactly where this occurs. So this is the buy or lease equation that kind of comes out there. So when I can actually get to that level, now I want to use operating leverage to basically use that capital and make money from a bank. Does that make sense? Or from a lending person by assuming additional risk, but risk that I can control within the margins of my particular business. And I put on the bottom there the step dynamic. A friend of mine by the name of Laddie Bukowski wrote a book called The Step Dynamic. And it really kind of talks about that fixed price thing. So I wanted to clarify that. Remember we had talked about how that fixed price was just a line that went out forever? Well, at some point, you got to move out of the place that you're in. So rent is fixed, remember? And now I just need to double my space. So that fixed price, when I reach a certain point, I got to do a step up. And a lot of times when I hit that step up, I go from being profitable to not profitable again. So it's very strategic when I make those changes, because even if I go to buy the lease, from leasing it originally to buying it, that just bumped my price up a little bit. So just understand how that whole piece works. But again, you can model all of that. So we talked about the business plan. We talked about the financial plan. We added a couple extra components, and we're done kind of with the marketing plan of the business plan as well.
Thank you for listening to How to Turn My Hobby into a Full-Fledged Business. To learn more about Steve Imke, or to learn more about what it takes to own and operate a small business, please visit stevebizblog.com. That's S-T-E-V-E. BIZBLOG.com. Or look for Steve's many books on various aspects of small business ownership at Amazon.com or at stevebizblog.com.